Welcome to episode 2 of Candid COVID Conversations with Mary. This is the first of a two-parter, and it's all about parenting perspectives. We have a special guest, Lauren. Lauren, Mary, and I will all be reflecting on our dual roles as parents and educators. Lauren has two little ones. Mary has adult children with children of their own, and I have older teenagers. Welcome to Candid COVID Conversations with Mary, episode 2. Welcome, Lauren and Mary. We have a special guest today. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you along. How are you today? Well, that's a loaded question, right?
Yeah, today has been very full.
Yeah, so I wanted to start today with a temperature check. So how are you coping in pandemic world, what, like 6 weeks in on this day?
On this day, it's like coping is such a interesting word, you know? I don't know if coping is quite the right word for me. I am simply, I feel like, momentum driven, right? Like I just have to kind of keep every day moving. Because if I stand still, it gets a little crazy. So I feel like I'm good. Keeping busy is good, but also sometimes it's too busy. This definitely feels like more work.
What feels like more work?
Just being home with two small children and working full time. And I'm also, you know, doing some outside of that. I'm still taking some classes.
Are you doing that at Cortland or at Syracuse?
Yeah, Cortland. And so I can, you know, finish up my internship this summer. So it's just been, you know, it's trying to prioritize my time to be efficient and effective without being in, like, you know, we get used to working in certain spaces, right? Like as adults, we've learned these are spaces and places where I can be productive. And in my home, I don't necessarily have those same spaces. So like trying to carve out those spaces and places to be productive is challenging. Like I don't really even have like a desk and like, right. And so, and especially when we're doing like videos with students, getting the computer at the level so that I'm not staring down. Like there's a physicality to being at home all day as well. Whereas when I was, you know, when we were working at school, I'm at least moving around the building, right? You're up, you're moving around the room. So I think in that way, it's been really difficult. The other part of me, the kind of more introverted part, is perfectly happy staying at home. The work side of me is struggling to stay on top of things and like rework my world so that I can continue to be effective and successful. But then like the like inner me is perfectly happy to just have my immediate family as my reach out, right? That like I sometimes find it exhausting to go out and having to interact with so many people. And so there are parts of this that have allowed me to like recharge. So I do find like in some ways my relationship with my kids is better because I'm not as exhausted in that way. So that when they are having their moments, I feel more able, even when I'm working a ton at home, to be able to respond to them with patience and with more love than I was when I was, you know, on my feet 8 hours and working 12-hour days and then coming back and like trying to do bedtime just was not a good mix.
That's a really good point because I'm here with two, you know, adult children and
totally adult.
they're like amazing. And so for me, it's like it's been so great for relationship building and growing so that I feel very fortunate. So, I mean, Mary, I want to check in, get a temperature check on you right now. And then I want to talk about the main idea that I want to talk about today, which is parenting, because the three of us represent parents in different phases. And I wanted to compare notes about what it's like parenting adult children who have children of their own, parenting little children, and a little bit about what it's like to parent when parenting is not really needed anymore and they're in your own home. So Mary, what's your temperature check?
Well, I think it's interesting to say that parenting never stops, I don't think. And I think now with having a daughter with a brand new baby and also having her, the baby that I want to see and I can't see, except, you know, and then having a four-year-old and she's trapped in a house and her husband's working upstairs and he can't come down and help her, but she can't have anybody there to give her a break except for me. So I read probably 45 to 50 minutes a day with her four-year-old. So I have to come up with books and activities. I know every name of every fucking construction vehicle, you know, and every day he says, so grandma, what do you have for me today? And today I of course had to put the sunglasses on the owl who wanted to read the story with us, but that's one family. And then my other family, there are three other grandchildren and then my daughter who got robbed today.
Oh no.
So, and trying to support her with that because she and her husband are tag teaming. So she goes to her office. She has six classes as a high school teacher and three children. And so she works every other day, but as I told you, Armin, they don't allow her, they do not do any video classes. Isn't that odd? But she was working all day. She put all the stuff in the car and locked it and went on a walk before she went home just to get a break. She came back and everything was stolen.
Oh no.
Windows had been broken of the car and everything was stolen. So it's just like one more avenue of having to support her and think about how she has to deal with this. You know, you can't just go to the police station.
Right. Yeah.
And so all of those steps and trying to help her, although there are cameras now outside, so that will maybe come out if cameras picked anything up, but she had a school computer in the car. You know, all of her work was in the car. Mm. Her fob key for their other car was there, which is over $300. All of the things that, you know, so I try to support them and think about that, you know, and then I have a son in Madrid and things in Madrid aren't hunky-dory, as you know. So, I mean, he's shocked that I go out walking. He doesn't think I should go out walking. And I always have to remind him that I don't live in Madrid, where there are drones overhead, you know, monitoring people, which makes sense perhaps in a city, but not here. So I there's just a different tension because I worry about my children. I worry about my grandchildren. I worry about how they're processing it, but I don't have that hin and her stuff that back and forth stuff that you have constantly, Lauren. But I think about times when, because I was a single parent for most of my children's lives, and just thinking about the times when they all got a flu 1 week after each other.
Yeah.
We were trapped.
Right.
Well, it was making me think, like, I would not be able to do what I'm doing now if I didn't have a partner and a co-parent. And it has essentially been freeing for me because he's supportive, understanding, and really able to step in that parenting role, that like he is doing the parenting while I'm working. It would not be doable otherwise. And it's so interesting you brought up, like, you know, the idea, because your grandchildren are essentially my kids' ages.
That's right? Why I send you links about the science center.
Which I love. But it's so funny because it's like when I, that first week we were off, we weren't asked to do supply anything for the students. And so my teacher brain immediately launched into like trying to keep my kids' routine the same and like kind of creating a theme each week and deciding here are activities we're going to do around it. And as I've been asked to do more each week, I have done less and less of that. And that is not one of the things that like Carl does with them. So interesting to hear me like hear you say like, oh, well, I read with him for 40 minutes to do this. And I'm like, man, I wish I could get my parents in on that.
Hi.
Well, yes, you too, but like
no, but get me some more books. I'll read to your kids.
Yeah, but he doesn't like it. He has Jude is like me. He is perfectly happy being at home and having all of the attention of his parents, right? Like he doesn't talk about school. And this is almost a concern of mine, because we're trying to get, you know, him ready for...
How old is he?
He's four. So he's going to start kindergarten next year. And, you know, we've been working to make sure that he was ready, because, you know, there were, at the very beginning of the year, the transition was very difficult at his preschool. And so we were talking about, like, well, you know, where is there going to be a good fit?
What is he like?
He likes being outside. He likes games. He likes sports. He's very competitive, and he is social. He has friends, but like, he doesn't talk about his school friends. He doesn't talk about his teachers, but he likes some of that stuff. So it's like, my preschool is still supplying, you know, they do a class 4 days a week, but to get him on is a challenge. And so it's like, you know, I imagine he's only four, and I am putting myself in the place of like other parents who have older kids, or my students having a same battle, right? And then of course it's like my youngest son, his preschool similarly does it, and it's like, he's only on for 10 minutes. He's into it. He will immediately like jump in and start doing the things, and my older son will hide from the computer.
I think that what I do, I have two grandchildren who one is four, just turned four, and the other one is going to be five. They're not siblings, but I have all my construction vehicles on the floor, and so I do that too. And I think of nature projects, and I send things, games and puzzles that I figure out what they like and what will take their time. I mean, that's how I feel I can try to help. And if I've tried to, you know, give you plants. I can give you more plants, by the way.
I
can give you stuff. But I know how hard that is to keep kids busy.
Yeah. I know. And we're lucky because we have, you know, you were talking about your son in Madrid. We're lucky. We have 6 acres. So like, you know, we can't, when the weather is nice, we can spend all day outside, and the boys are perfectly happy to do so. And I'm happy, you know, it's like, that's totally age appropriate. Like they, it's totally fine for them to play outside all day. And I could not do that. Like, that is not my happy place as a parent. And like, Carl is very happy to be outside with them, even when they're trying. Like, I think that they enjoy that. I enjoy being outside too, but like, I cannot do the repetitive play the way that Carl.
Carmen, is that a boy thing?
Yes, 100%. I could live outside, absolutely. But you two are incredible. I mean, just thinking about what you're both going through right now, I can't even fathom it. And I feel like I won the jackpot, not having to figure out what you're both trying to figure out between children and grandchildren. It seems a near impossibility. Obviously, technology has aided us quite a bit, right? Because if we had a pandemic 20 years ago, this would look entirely different.
I know this sounds really fucking stupid, but I think of Laura Ingalls Wilder sometimes. I think of them in those places they lived. And when I was a kid, my mother, when we had a sabbatical in Palo Alto, and when we came back across country to come back to Ithaca, we took 6 weeks, and we went to every homestead of the Wilder family.
I mean, Mary, we got chickens.
But you're not listening.
I'm all in. I just need the bonnet, and like,
I'll make you the bonnet.
I would wear it gardening. It would be solid. I joke with my parents some about it, because I am that planner. And I think it's interesting, like the three ways I've seen people respond to this, and I've said this in a couple of different spaces, is like the human responses. It's fight, flight, or freeze, right? Like, some people respond by just freezing and trying to do everything like it was before, as long as I can kind of recreate my routine and whatever, and like do exactly what I did before, everything's going to be okay. Some people fight in the sense of, I'm going to plan everything possible that, you know, to like combat any possible obstacle that's going to come in my way. And that's, for me, it was, all right, way ahead of the game. My dad teased me. It was probably when the news was first starting to drop in Washington, and I was on my way to school early for a meeting. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stop by Wegmans. And this was, I mean, weeks before. I was like, and just get a giant thing of toilet paper and some dried beans. And I called my dad on the phone and I was like, you're going to laugh at me, but I just did this thing. And he was like, you are hilarious. Like, what do you think's going to happen? And then it was like, the first week we were home, I hopped on my sewing machine and I made face masks for everyone in my family. And my similarly, like, shared with my parents, I was like, hey, like, do you want a pattern or do you want it to be neutral? And they were like, I mean, you can send them to us. Exactly. And then it was, you know, 3 weeks later, there's now, you know, CDC recommends. I was like, mm-hmm. So it's like, my brain just works that way.
My brain works like yours. I was same here. New stuff. But also, I have a mother who lived through the Depression in Europe. I mean, my father came to this country in the early 20s, but my mother came here in the 30s. And if you'd ever had any of the cooking that I had to grow up with.
I'm from Indiana, Mary. I have had some boiled of their life.
My mother had used the Woman's Day recommended menu for people who were on a limited income. And meanwhile, my father's a fucking professor at Cornell. And we would look at the menu and go, oh, God. And then my mother allowed us to sign up to cook. And I would always choose the night that we made cube steak so that I could drink. This is really sick. But I was at this pipsqueak of a kid, but I was starving for iron. And I could drink the juice from the cube steak pan.
Ooh.
That's how hungry I was.
Right.
You know, but we had this piece of meat like this for eight. I had five siblings. So like a little piece of meat like this. So it is interesting, but I find that I did what you did, but I've always done this. I always have more food.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, I thought about that.
And I haven't gone so far as like the hoarder's mentality, because I really think that that's dangerous, right? Like, I think it's dangerous for other people. It like just kind of underlines the have and have not. But it was for me, it was just, and we haven't need, like, we just bought that one, you know, the regular, before they were out, the Wegmans giant pack, which for a family of four is not a crazy thing to buy. Yeah, that's the thing another thing that I hadn't considered is like, you know, how often have I purchased groceries 2 weeks at a time? That first couple weeks of trying to really stay at home more. And not like, now I know we go through a gallon and a half of milk every week. We go through 2 dozen eggs every week. Like, those boys, and I know that they're snacking more because they're bored, but small children eat a lot of food. And when we go to the store and there are limits on things that I'm like, we legit eat that in a week. I don't know how families who have more than us can shop.
Interesting though, you're at home now with them, because I know my oldest daughter, who has a child who's going to be 5 in July, and this child has been in daycare for a very long time. And one of the things they began to realize is that she needed a schedule. She kept saying to them, like, when is snack? When is reading? When is art? And Maggie was saying to me, if she can't have those segments in her day, she gets really confused and ornery.
That applies to our family as well. I feel like the first 3 weeks or so, maybe first 4 weeks, were a challenge, because schedule, how do you figure out your schedule? But now I feel like everyone's sort of falling into place, or everything is falling into place. And everyone in our household has a schedule. Like, I lock in office hours. I'm available to people to connect with me with technology questions, library questions, research questions, book access. I go into the school like once every couple of days to gather materials and for packaging. But it's really, it's I need the structure. And Leo needs a structure, and Toby needs a structure. And I feel like we're all figuring it out, but maybe not all of us. You know, so maybe the three of us are. What about the rest of the world? What about an emancipated high school student who supposedly lives in one apartment but doesn't really live there? And you can't deliver packages to that person because they're not telling you where the real address is. What's their life like? And how are they managing?
Does the district even have any clue?
Working on it.
I think they do. You know, it's like I've been in touch with a fair amount of kids, and that was my first week as a teacher. My post was, what are you doing to establish a routine? Here's what we're doing in our house, because I wanted to plant that seed.
Great, Lauren. That's really wonderful.
But I still think people struggle with it. And like, I recommended, I was like, here's what, you know, and it was like trending, like, you know, there were, and then it got made fun of. It was like in social media, it was like, here's a schedule. And then it was like, here's what an actual schedule is. Light that schedule on fire, right? Like,
yeah.
There were those elements, but I think that there's something to it. I really need that kind of schedule. We have a routine of sorts for the kids. And like your grandchild, I actually think that we need more of a schedule. But if I can't implement it, it's not going to happen. And so that's something that I've had to let go of.
Yeah, but I also think with you, see, she has two older siblings who have, they're in grade school, but they have their specific times. Right. With their, which is interesting, in the grade schools, they're allowed to Zoom, and the high school, they're not, which I don't quite understand. So they have all of these different things. And so she's out there going, all right, what am I supposed to be doing? I usually do art. I usually do reading. I'm supposed to go on the playground. I'm supposed to relate.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to send things for her to do, because it must be, I mean, God, it must be so hard for you. You're supposed to be teaching. You're supposed to be, we're making sure your kids are okay. And you have a great husband, which is wonderful, because then you think about people who don't have any of those skills.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about a kid just wrote me an email today that said, couldn't come to the class meeting. My assignment's going to be in late. I'm working at McDonald's and helping out my sister who has a
kid. That was one of the things I asked students as well in a survey was the first question. And I did this for two reasons. So the question was, have you picked up any part-time work to help contribute to family income because of either furloughs, lost wages, or...
Questionnaire thing that you put together for that?
Yeah, I think I...
Can you send that to me?
Yes, I can. And so, and I did that even knowing that like many of my students aren't, but I thought it was equally as important to remind them that was a reality for some of our kids. And I did have students who responded that they had in fact done that, but it's like, I think that there, it is even within our own community, this only highlights the kind of gaps that our society is saying. We're seeing it medically, right? Like pre-existing conditions that affect some populations more than others.
And by the way, our poverty was in the New York Times. Did you know that?
Or what was?
The poverty in Tompkins County was in the Sunday, I think it was the Sunday Times. There's a picture of the jungle. It was talking about.
And will you send me that?
Well, I'm still looking for this because the two people I walked with said, didn't you see that? And then my sister in Boston said, we just saw that thing in the Times about the poverty level in Tompkins County. And I said, yeah, you guys are constantly talking to me about, you know, I just teach in Ithaca. And I said, have you been to the Caroline Hills lately? You know, you've been to these areas and so then they began to say, well, what is the district doing? And I said, well, I think it's pretty amazing what the school bus drivers are doing. I think they deserve the most amazing blue ribbon praise.
We're delivering, the district's delivering more than something like 2000 meals. A day.
People's homes.
Yeah.
And 3,400 Chromebooks, hotspots so that people can connect to the internet. Agriculture kits so that students taking an ag class can do home gardening.
Home all of the kindergartners. I mean, I saw someone else shared that they get like colored pencils and like scissors, like all of the art supplies that a kindergartner would play with, they sent home to like the kindergartners. Like,
it's beautiful.
It's so interesting. I think one of the, if nothing else, I've been really, and of course this comes from a place of privilege because I'm not having to worry about it, but I have been really inspired by the creativity I've seen from people and the kindness I've seen from people and the way that like people are thinking about creative solutions to try to fill in the gaps, not knowing when this is going to end, gives me a lot of wind in my sails.
Can I take that and pivot to another topic?
Yes, it is your podcast.
Well, it's all of ours podcast. So one of my questions I had for you both is, what are your thoughts and hopes for the world after the pandemic? I just finished reading The Plague. And now I'm on to reading, what's the name of the book? I don't have it in front of me because it's an ebook.
but it's the ultimate account of the Spanish influenza 1918.
Oh my God, how can you read that right now? That's so funny.
Well, okay, so you got to understand that for me, I listen to about 6 to 8 podcasts a day that are mostly political and mostly touching on what's going on. For me, that's comfort. Mm-hmm. I feel like I need to know where we're headed, you know, as a country, as a world, how we're going to respond to this big picture. And in the end of the plague, it's actually very hopeful.
Yeah. They're your chickens. They're providing you comfort and future sustenance.
Really? Yeah. And see, I'm reading, I from the New York Public Library, because I live alone, and now I really live alone, I love audiobooks, and I need another voice in my house because my voice is getting really boring. Because I talk to, you know, I find sometimes that I haven't been in the grocery store, thanks to Armin and his lovely family, since March 14th. But when I was at the grocery store, sometimes I go, am I talking to myself out loud about my list? You know? But now at home, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. And from the New York Public Library, which I think is one of the most wonderful libraries in the whole world. Indeed. And I got this amazing audiobook by Colum McCann called A Paragon. I don't know if you guys have read about this book. It's about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, but it's a true story based on these two men who lost children to terrorists and how they became. I already talked to you about this, Armin, in the last podcast, but the book is so beautifully written, and I had to order the book because I got to the last 20 minutes of the book, and the next morning I thought, I'll finish the book, and I went to listen to it, and it went back to the public library.
Oh no.
And then when I went on holds, I couldn't get it. Yeah. For whatever, but the book is read by an Irishman, it's so beautiful. But the book is amazing. It's very depressing in some ways. It's horrible, but it's also very hopeful in terms of conflict. And I found it interesting how they drew parallels between what has happened in Ireland with the religious conflicts and what's happening in Israel. I love this book, and I love the name because of this idea that this is a metaphor for, you know, a paragon is something where there are so many sides to something that you are forced to see every angle of a problem, which I think really is apropos to what's happening.
Yeah.
Now, because the positive things that come out of this, but I thought my 10-year-old, almost 10-year-old granddaughter said today, well, she's one of these people that always says to me, Grandma, you need to calm down. You know, but then she said today, what she said today was, it's going to be hard for a really long time. She says, I try things like writing letters to my friends because I'm really tired of being online, but they don't answer my letters.
Oh. Yeah. You know, yeah. Tell her she can send me a letter and I will write her back.
Oh, that's sweet.
She would love that.
I'll have the boys help me. It'll be a project.
I'll tell her because she said, Grandma, would you write me another letter tomorrow? And I said, I've got the stamps.
I just ordered a bunch of stamps, so.
Next week, we'll continue this conversation with Lauren and Mary, educators and parents living here in Ithaca, New York. My name is Armin Hurick. Thank you for listening to Candid COVID Conversations with Mary. If you like this podcast, please tell your friends to search Spotify or Google Podcasts for Candid COVID Conversations with Mary.